If you haven't yet used Motion, here's why you should try it out. Everyone knows that the right creative is the number one lever for success with paid ads. That's how you make money. But consistently shipping new winning creative? You're going to need your media buyers and creative teams on the same page. Right now, you're probably spending hours going back and forth between Google Sheets and your ad platforms and tools, and then spending even more time plugging it all into different decks for the rest of your team. Or maybe you've built your own automated solution, but it still can't deliver the tactical creative insights you need to scale. In a perfect world, you'd have an elegant way to combine visual assets and performance data so media buyers can save time and creative teams can get the details they need to make great ads all in one place. That's where Motion comes in. In seconds, you can build powerful visual reports using data from your ad accounts. You can monitor your performance metrics and see your visual assets in the same platform. No need to go back and forth across multiple apps. You'll finally have media buyers and creative teams working together to create and scale your next big winner. If you're ready to learn how the best D2C and e-commerce brands use Motion to ship winning Meta, TikTok, and YouTube ads, book a demo today or start a free trial at motionapp.com. Even better, Motion offers a monthly subscription plan so you can dodge those annoying annual contracts. So get 50% off your first month when you mention Common Thread Collective to the Motion team. Learn more at motionapp.com. That's motionapp.com.
Welcome back to another episode of the E-Commerce Playbook Podcast. Today, you get a rare occurrence. Normally, Luke is here when I am not. Some might say there's not enough oxygen for us both to talk at the same time in a room, but we're going to give it a shot today. And we're going to be diving into a topic that is, I would say it's a buzzy trend word right now around incrementality and some of the things that we're seeing as it relates to the work with our clients directly and some interesting discoveries that we're seeing as it relates to meta incrementality in particular. But we want to talk about this today. So Luke, you are the man on the streets. You are the tactician in residence. We are excited to have you back. Welcome to another episode.
Glad to be here. Looking forward to diving in. I think this will be an interesting conversation. Given that we have a certain perspective, I think, around incrementality, attribution tools, just sort of that broader conversation. And this, I hope we'll be able to have sort of a nuanced perspective on what our take actually is and sort of separate out some of these things as well. Because I think they can be lumped in this big category together, but that's not true of what really they're doing. And I think they have a place in the right spot within the mix.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, is that it is important to draw clarity and definition to these terms in a way that level set the conversation for what we are describing and talking about. And attribution is a topic that is not for today, and it's one that we've covered a lot in terms of the issues that we have with measurement in the form of attribution through various form factors that are disassociated in particular from the optimization of the platforms themselves and some of the problems that we believe that causes. But for today, we're interested more in incrementality, with particularly my interest is to try to help brands think about where they can get the greatest incremental reward for their dollars in this moment. And not even just incremental revenue, but I would say incremental contribution relative to their bottom line. And so maybe Luke, start with, how do you think about and define incrementality? And maybe what are customers usually in pursuit of when they sort of drag you into their incrementality journey?
So incrementality, the way I frame it is, where's the next dollar best spent that's going to lead to the resulting profit dollar that most likely would not have occurred otherwise? So where can I allocate my dollars in a way that's going to drive incremental contribution that likely would not have occurred if I had not allocated that dollar to that specific channel? It's not concerned with how do I assign credit to the ad dollars and their productivity on a channel basis, not concerned with what is it, new or returning customer revenue. That's important to tease out as well. It's overall contribution dollars to the business, agnostic of the specific channel that it's attributed to or the specific customer cohort that it's driving through. And so these conversations mostly come up when brands are looking for ways to deploy dollars to help beat to help comp or beat their revenue forecast specifically, and in the context of we're trending down compared to a historical time period or a time period that we'd like to comp up against, where can we deploy dollars to bridge the gap and help find incremental contribution dollars to the business that likely would not be there if we did not invest those dollars otherwise. So that's where I frame up incrementality in terms of more common language. And specifically, incrementality is using holdout or scale tests to look at the incremental impact of ad dollars through various tactics. So through the use of those specific tools, geolifts, either in a hold or scale test fashion, looking at what is the impact of either holding out a set of geos or scaling into a subset of geos within this specific tactic or channel, how does that result in increased business contribution for that brand?
Yeah. And I think that's a great summary. Thank you. And the idea that it's the dollar that would have not occurred otherwise, I think is really the key is that, and I want to level set that one. I think this is a noble, good pursuit. The idea that we would hold our dollars to a cause and effect impact where we are not just finding corollary relationships where we spent here and revenue came, but that there's a causal relationship between the dollars we're spending and the effects that we're creating is really important. Now, if we start and say that that is a benefit, that that is a positive, that the idea of holding out, comparing two groups of potential customers, some that receive an ad, some that don't, and comparing the results is a good structural process for answering a question about what historically occurred. Now, maybe we could talk about some of our concerns about the application of these things in some ways, and then we'll get to some of the results that we found interesting. So generally, I'll share a few of mine and then you can layer in, is that the challenge is that you can look at and answer a specific question in a specific period of time, but then what you're left with is an application of that learning over a future period where a lot of the variables can change. So we may run a holdout or an incrementality study on a channel in a specific period of time. It's February and we did it on Google branded search versus not. And then we are left having to apply that incremental factor. Usually what it produces is some multiple of the results relative to what the platform is reporting. So it's, you know, got a 130% incremental outcome relative to the result, or 62%, whatever it might be. And then you apply that factor going forward in your measurement of that channel, right? Is that sort of how you see brands most commonly applying these results?
Yes, yeah, that's exactly it. Specifically, what different increment. So what's important here too is like running a geolift test, brands can do this outside of a specific platform as well. It just takes a really thoughtful, well-structured test and execution and someone with experience. And so platforms like Measured or House.io, like there's a few out there that are more commonly known, just have a really good, clean setup for being able to do this that doesn't require you to be a data scientist. And so like that they structure these in that way. And then the output of them is exactly that, an incrementality measure, which is a multiple. And so specifically what that'll look like is the platforms are pulling the platform attributed revenue, usually based on a click basis. So in most cases, you're going to look at your Facebook attribution on a 7-day click basis and kind of define that. And then the incrementality metric will be applied against that attributed revenue. So let's say my Meta ROAS is a 1.5 7-day click and I'm getting a read of 100% incrementality from the platform after doing a geolift test. 100% is going to be applied against the 1.5 7-day click. So my incremental ROAS is going to be just a 1.5. Whereas if it's a 200% incrementality read, my incremental ROAS is going to be a 3. Incremental ROAS on my on-platform is going to be a 1.5, which is going to indicate that there is a large number of unattributed conversions on a 7-day click basis that my Meta Media Mix is actually leading to within other channels. And that specifically, that percent incrementality measure is the multiple that's applied against the efficiency read on that platform. And then you can use that for, yeah, making decisions on an ongoing basis. And so, to your point, I think it's really interesting to pull out two main things, which is how often should the incrementality multiples be reassessed or measured? And then what do you do with the reads that it's giving you from those platforms? And in terms of cadence, most most books will recommend like quarterly revisiting a geolift, at least for your core DR channel. So like, especially for Meta and Google Search, PMax, doing a quarterly revisit of a geo or scale lift test just to validate your incrementality, because things change, your product mix changes, all of those sorts of factors. So that sort of a cadence is what's most recommended from these different platforms in terms of how often should I rerun geolift test for those incrementality.
So one of the things I find challenging is often I have seen that in that cadence of re-reviewing the incrementality measures, that they may change, right? So talk to me a little bit about what you see in terms of the consistency of incrementality results across channels. And then let's talk a little bit about what are some of the variables that go into channel level incrementality measurements? Because it seems to me that there are sort of like infinity possible settings within every channel that may or may not affect the incrementality of any given period of time.
So the geolift tests can dramatically alter what the incrementality measures are from different channels. And I don't know if this is something, I would say in my experience, this isn't something that's has enough emphasis specifically from partners doing these tests in terms of how wide the variance can be in your post geolift test reads from your channels versus what the starting point incrementality reads are. On a platform like Measured, for example, you're going to get a starting point incrementality read that's based on a subset of customers in a similar industry, based on both brands of a similar size, and then using their MMM on your current media mix to sort of like get you to a starting point incrementality read for that channel. And then they recommend doing a consistent GLF test to read that. We're in the middle of a incrementality test for a brand currently doing a GLF test on a total account spend for a large brand that we all know. And currently the incrementality reads are coming back over twice as high as what the starting point initial read. It's actually closer to 3x as high currently. We're about 3 weeks into a 4 week test. So those will alter over the coming week, but based on the volume we're currently at, the incrementality reads are not going to come in lower. That's for sure. They're going to come in higher and at least 50% higher, if not 100% higher, 120% higher based on where things are currently going at. And what that leads to is a really different set of behaviors and thinking around where does the maximum opportunity for our brand live in terms of where we should allocate our ad dollars and where we should be thinking about new initiatives. And in this case, previously, the ideas were around, okay, if this is the state of our current media mix, we need to go look for investment into new areas, right? We need to, let's ramp up DV360, let's ramp up Criteo prospecting, like let's look for new channels and new campaign types within those channels that we can test and push ad dollars into. But if your Meta reads are coming back in incrementality, that's saying your incremental ROAS is close to a 3 within that channel, then it makes you start to think that the highest impact activities you can have is trying to spend as much as you can on Meta while holding that efficiency level, which is net new offers, angles, creatives, audiences, everything on Meta to maximize the outcome within that channel. And it'll redirect the organization completely in terms of where the focus is on channel diversification versus amplification within Meta.
Yeah. And this is one of those things where I'm just going to caveat right now something important about CTC and our business structure. Because, you know, this last month I've been sharing a lot of data about Meta performance. And the critique that we will give is the idea that we are biased and have an incentive to propagate that Meta is a good channel as if there's a financial incentive that underlies that. With the particular customer you're talking about and 98% of CTC's portfolio, we have no deals related to a percentage of ad spend. And in 100% of cases, we have no deals related to percentage of spend on Meta. And we make no additional dollars if people spend more money on Meta. We only make incremental dollars if their contribution margin as a business grows. That's our only shared financial incentive. And so the reason that we are so pro Meta is because it is the place that primarily drives incremental positive contribution margin. And in this case, it's another example where a customer has a perception of channel and diversification and risk and is looking for a way to assign impact as broadly as possible. And the result back from the incrementality study is, hey, in this primary growth channel, there's actually way more impact than you're even giving credit for on a 7-day click basis in reporting. And what that got to me was, one, I want to talk about the structural account setup that we think yields incrementality. Because it's funny, I had a 40th birthday party on Sunday or on Saturday night, and we had some friends there, and one of them was a leader of an e-commerce brand that spends a ton of money, and he just got an incrementality study back from Meta directly that actually showed that the account was like way over reporting revenue relative to impact. Now, their account structure is very different than ours in the sense that it has a much more broad ranging set of objectives besides just conversion. It has reach and video views and all the other brand awareness plays as well. So how do you think about how account structure impacts incrementality, and how when you do these tests, you have to have a consideration for the underlying setup of the account itself, not just assume that Meta as a channel is a channel is a channel, regardless of what brand exists.
This episode of the E-commerce Playbook podcast is brought to you by Motion, the creative analytics platform used by top e-com and D2C brands like Vori, True Classic, The Farmer's Dog, Hexclad, and hundreds more. Motion lets you monitor your performance metrics and see your visual assets in the same platform, plus build powerful visual reports using data from your ad accounts, bringing media buyers and creative teams together. Get 50% off your first month when you mention Common Thread Collective to the Motion team.
So let's break down incrementality into some of its component parts, because I think they speak directly to then what the account structure should be that then helps to impact those factors. I think Measured does this in a great way, actually, to define what impacts changes in incrementality over time. And so when you're comparing to previous time periods, you can see how is my incremental ROAS changing, but then what are the drivers for that incremental ROAS? And there's actually four specific factors that they pull out that impact the incremental ROAS reads. First is your average order value. So that being higher is going to have a positive impact on incrementality. That being lower is going to have a negative impact. The next metric is impression conversion rate, which is really click-through rate. It is, what is the percentage of folks that are seeing my ads? Are they clicking through my ads? And that being higher has a positive impact on your incremental ROAS as well. It's really interesting. This will be one we could spend a whole episode on. CPMs is another factor, that CPMs being higher has a positive impact on the incremental ROAS as well. And then the incrementality read from that.
So I'm just going to pause there, because this is a thing that, like, I'm exhausted defending this, but this is, so to be clear, this is not our language. Are you reading this from Measured's incrementality in particular?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So in the assessment, increased CPM is a positive signal of incrementality. I just wanted to say
positive. It's not, okay. It's not negative. Honestly, I don't know how each of these four factors are weighted in driving incremental ROAS. I do know that a geo lift or scale test, which is the final fourth factor of your incrementality read, does have the highest impact on the incremental ROAS from that channel, as it should. Like, your most recent geo lift test is going to inform the incremental ROAS, but your average order value, impression conversion rate or click-through rate, and then your CPM, those three factors also feed into how the incremental ROAS reads change over time. Because you can think about it this way, your geo lift or scale tests are static. If you run that once a quarter, you get that read and that populates in the platform. But your incremental ROAS is actually dynamic over that time period, because your average order value, impression click-through rate, and your click-through rate and CPM fluctuate over time. So those are the three factors that'll fluctuate, not remain static, and they're overlaid over your most recent geo or scale lift test as sort of the foundational read for that channel.
Yeah, it's almost as if price is a signal of value in the advertising world, right? Like the things that are cheap for a reason. Okay, so continue on. So we have these sets of underlying measures now, and one of them you even talked about is click-through rate. So how then do you think about how the optimization or campaign structure relative to those incremental inputs would affect incrementality?
Yeah, so it might be helpful, actually, we could take a step back from Meta and talk about a different platform, because the same principles apply, and then we won't get too pigeonholed into our Meta argument. But
fair.
So within the Google platform, our incremental ROAS has increased as well for this specific brand over time. I'm looking at the total mix of our Google branded search, our Google non-branded search, our performance max, and then any standard shopping campaigns we're still running at this time last year, which may have been a few. And then the biggest change within the Google mix specifically is there was this brand had a brand awareness, like high level brand ambassador that we were engaged with at this time last year. And we were running a lot more YouTube media. So upper funnel, non-conversion optimized YouTube media. We were running YouTube for action. So I won't say non-conversion optimized, like there's an opportunity for that person to convert, but YouTube is a much more upper funnel channel compared to performance max, obviously. So the main thing that's changed within the Google media mix for this brand is cutting YouTube investment specifically. And that has led to more incremental, higher incremental ROAS and return from this channel, even at higher levels of spend. And so when you look at those factors that we talked about, the CPMs, the click-through rate, the impression conversion rate, our CPMs are for sure up, right? Because YouTube, you're going to get a much cheaper inventory. But our click-through rate is substantially higher as well because YouTube's driving a lower click-through rate than PMax and the other channels. And so that in itself, the media mix there shows what investment in different sub-channels within Google is going to do in impacting your incremental ROAS. And the same principle applies to paid social. Just like you mentioned, Taylor, like if we're running non-conversion optimized campaign at this time last year, which we weren't, but if you're running reach or video views or whatever, like that is going to negatively impact your incremental ROAS in every circumstance that I've seen, similar to how we're seeing that play out on the paid search side of things. So that's a piece of it. And then the second piece of it, in addition to the overall media mix and what campaign optimizations you're going after, is how you're bidding against your conversion media as well. And in this case, for this brand, one of the biggest changes is we have more ROAS goal bidding. So cost control, specifically ROAS goal bidding within this account, much more than we had at this time last year. And there was some highest value campaigns running at this time last year, which isn't the case anymore. Everything is ROAS goal cost control bidding, which has increased the impression conversion rate and CPM, which has increased the incremental ROAS.
That was great. So there's something really important here. So I think a very oversimplified narrative that happens in our industry is to think of incrementality as this thing that moves up as you move up the funnel, right? So people would say like, oh yeah, the problem with meta or branded search is it's all just bottom of funnel. It's non-incremental, okay? This is really poor thinking. What I would say is that there are versions of bottom of funnel advertising, and I mean true, like bottom, like display remarketing, and allowing video or view optimization in your remarketing traffic or DPA on Meta. Branded search, these can be really low incrementality at the bottom of the funnel because when we think, go back to this idea, the purchase that wouldn't have happened otherwise, there's no obligation to any action oriented to a subset of customers that are very close to the purchase path, okay? Now, people jump from there to a secondary conclusion, which is then, therefore, top of funnel media, YouTube, television, et cetera, must be the most incremental because it is customers that are nowhere near purchase because they are the least aware fundamentally. But in reality, it's sort of like a loop that comes back around, which is that, yes, that bottom of the funnel stuff that I mentioned earlier is really low incrementality, but so is the brand, so is that very top of funnel traffic in almost every case because of you go back to those inputs. The estimated action rate, all of the causal factors that say the customer actually was impacted are also really low, which is why the inventory is so cheap. So somewhere, this is what I think people just think it's just linear. It moves, incrementality moves up as you move out the funnel, and that is just not the case almost ever. What's really the sweet spot for incrementality, and this is where I'd love to focus on, then in your perspective. So if we sort of say that in a lot of those cases, and again, don't come at me with your edge case. I understand that there are cases where both branded search, I saw one example, or TV can be incremental. I'm not saying it's binary, yes or no. There are cases, but in general, those things have lower incrementality. Now, in the sweet spot of the middle, where we see high levels of incremental impact, what do those campaigns look like? What are they structurally in your experience?
Yeah. Maybe, so to take one step back, before we get to the campaign structure on your point, like every channel, the incrementality also degrades at a very different rate, which is the important thing to pull out here, which is for the brand we're talking about in this case, their incremental ROAS read from branded search is actually one of the highest in the account, as it should. But once you start spending $10,000 a month more, like increase your investment 10%, it drops off a cliff. So if you think about like the diminishing returns curve, like each one of these channels has a really different format, just like structure, what that looks like. Where like branded search, you could think of being like really vertical in terms of like the optimal point, but then it starts dropping off once you start investing more. Whereas Meta has a much longer tail in the top, and like you're trying to, you're able to ride that more. And what's funny is like, when we think about Tatari or like running TV, like that's going to actually probably have one of the flattest curves, which means like you could scale for a very long time before you start seeing meaningful diminishing returns. But overall, the incrementality is lower, right? So like you're getting a 0.3, like a 30% incrementality there versus like 100% on Meta. You could hold your 30% on TV for a long time. Like you could 5X your investment and it'll probably stay there, which is, I think, part of the draw to find platforms like that, where like you can just scale and scale and your incrementality is not going to start dropping off where it is going to on branded search, for example.
And this is so important. This is another reason why you have to, and I'm speaking now, if you are a smaller eight-figure brand and you are hearing really big brands talk about these other channels, here's what I want to caution you with. If you're HexClad or Jones Road Beauty or what, you've been running at a ROAS that is like the 90th percentile. Like you are so efficient in these core channels, way more efficient than you, small business, because they have great brand reputation, amazing product market fit, all these things. So when you go get 30% incrementality in a channel that scales a ton, that might still pencil. You might still be profitable and able to produce huge unlock of additional volume, because even at that 30% measure, it still works. And this is why the brands that win, okay, that can scale the biggest, are able to spend the most money on a customer and still convert them. It's the old Henry Ford saying, either the customer value is high enough to them. This is why insurance is like the biggest spender. Customers are worth tens of thousands of dollars over long periods of time, right? So they can go spend a ton of money on top of funnel advertising that has low incrementality, but it's a flat curve that scales infinitely, basically. But it's not to say that you can go produce efficient volume there today, right? Like, and this is, I think, the noise and the muddle of the way these things get sort of extrapolated and applied that I think is frustrating, is that they are different channels with different objectives and values relative to the individual business needs and capabilities.
Yeah. Yep. And so I think like the sweet spot for most brands really is Met based on what we're seeing. Because like the running at that 30% incrementality is not going to pencil for the majority of brands, even though you could scale into oblivion potentially. Whereas like you can't just keep pummeling money into branded search and your bottom funnel, you know, PMAX non-brand exclusion campaigns, because the incrementality of those are going to start to drop off, right? They're just capturing demand there. So where can I create net new demand that is at a positive incremental contribution? And Meta is where that opportunity exists for the large majority of brands. So in terms of the, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, okay, so, and I would just even go a little bit further than just Meta. It's not just Meta generally. It's, to me, it's a specific construct within Meta that is when people talk about a magical product or Meta is the best platform, it's actually really a very specific structural engagement in Meta that I think is their ability to actually drive user to action in a novel way that is like disproportionate to everything else. So maybe let's talk a little bit about, in this case, what are these campaigns? What is the structure that is allowing us to do this? And then how do we, and then maybe we're going to talk hypothetically about how we're going to take these reads and then apply them in a way that allows us to even drive more value.
Yeah. So three very important things in terms of the account structure on Meta that's going to lead to the highest incremental contribution. One is all campaigns are optimized for purchase conversion. And this is like taking for granted that you have the pixel set up right, your EMQ scores above an 8.0, like you're getting all the signal on your product catalog set up well, right? Like all of that is really important to make sure your conversion purchase optimized campaigns are driving the thing that you want them to. But purchase conversion optimization. Second, using cost controls. Specifically, we've seen higher incrementality from ROAS goal bidding versus a bid or cost cap, which I think is important because it leads into the third one, which is separated by key product category or even specific product funnels, because we'll see really differing incremental impact reads from one product category versus the other. So purchase conversion optimized using cost control bidding, likely ROAS goal is going to lead to the highest incrementality because that's going to connect to each of your product categories having different increment of contribution and having different AOVs as well.
Yeah. So the ROAS bidding often is value optimized, right? So you're getting that AOV impact as well as we're using a 7-day click optimization in this case, which I think is an important part of this as well. I'm excited to test a few of the places where we are using some broader view and things just to see what happens in that sense. But it is important to understand, even within the confines of an incrementality measure for the channel at the campaign level, or I think in measure they call it topic or whatever the subset is, there's really variable outcomes across those different results in ways that some of these are more than others. And I think a lot of that has to do with how much pre-existing demand for your products are there. So we have a lot of times we think about brands as homogenous amongst their product mix, but it's really not the case, right? If you're Lululemon, the women's yoga pant has substantially more existing demand than men's sweaters, if they're even in that category. You know, like there's just a subset of organic demand that exists around some of these products versus others. And as you move into novel categories, that's going to differentiate a ton too. So those are all really important to consider. But the incrementality, even in meta, can decay really quickly when you get into more view optimization, broader conversion objectives, these various things. Now, again, there's ways to pair them together and do hold out, and you should run them, find the answer for yourself. But in terms of where that sweet spot of incrementality, and this is, I think, sometimes why I find the practice of incrementality to be redundant, because the result is always the same. Click optimized meta prospecting with a holdout of your existing customers or, you know, a subset to lapsed customers is always the most incremental thing you can do. And so when you think about the result being twice as good as the result in platform, all of a sudden now we can set our cost controls are pretty low relative to our previous expectation and still be driving positive results for the business.
Yeah. And I think maybe to then take this to a step in terms of like what the business outcome and that expectation should be, I think it's important to say like the goal here isn't to just increase the incremental ROAS reads within your meta, right? Your measure dashboard. Like we're trying to drive the business impact. And so ultimately that should be showing up on the P&L level for your brand. But before you even get there, you can start to see signs of what the incremental impact is. And we're starting to see this for the brand that we've been talking about here, which is like, as we've been scaling up meta into these really strong incremental reads, what is the downstream impact that we're starting to see? For this specific brand, they have had been experiencing some pretty significant year-over-year headwinds in terms of the contribution from their organic search channels, their direct channels. Like when we think about Google Analytics and kind of that breakdown, those core channels that signal organic demand related to some of brand ambassador impact I mentioned last year, where they were investing in terms of influencers and athletes. So they have these headwinds that are showing up in their organic search and direct channels. As we've been scaling up into meta, the contribution from that channel has increased. But what started to happen is organic search and direct have started to comp up compared to last year. We're starting to see the user volume grow, starting to see the last click revenue attribution from those channels in Google Analytics start to comp back up from last year. And we're not going about this in a way we're saying, how do we drive as many impressions as possible to help fill the gap in organic search and direct, right? Like, how do we just drive traffic volume that's going to flow down? We're saying, how do we invest in the highest incremental channel that's going to lead to day one incremental profit dollars and then downstream impact of more dollars from other channels that we're seeing those headwinds on? And so that's where you can start to see this play out, is not just the impact within the channel itself, but how does this look on your organic direct channels within your marketing mix, and how did those start to react once you start to lean into your highest incrementality? Because that's what we should expect to happen, right? If these are driving dollars that are above what the platform is taking credit for from a click perspective, your other channels should start to show some impact of that contribution.
Yeah. And in this case, like when we talk about how dramatic it is, so if we think about, again, let's tiptoe very gently here into attribution, which is to say, when we were running these campaigns, you have a 7-day click optimization that you're measuring on a 7-day click reported attribution. And the incremental report was actually closer to if we had set up the account looking at 28-day click, 1-day view attribution.
Again, yeah, that's
I
right.
Got a tweet about this that I think was confusing. I'm not talking about optimizing for that, but I'm saying that when we looked at the revenue attributed via that model, 28-day click, 1-day view, it matched the incremental ROAS that we saw in that campaign in a way that's like, yes. Holy cow, like And if we all think back to 2016-17, and this is what I was referring to, that was default meta. And we all loved it, right? 28-day click, one-day view, rock and roll. That was the attribution setting that we all measured and reported on. And so when we, I think a lot of times we forget that when we comp to ROAS from those eras, we were using a much broader attribution model in that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's interesting as well is if we were to switch those campaigns to start optimizing for view attribution, likely the incrementality reads would start to tank. So the optimization is still purchase conversion, ROAS goal building, bidding separated by product category, but the actual revenue contribution from those campaigns is more closely measured on a 28-day click, one-day view in terms of the incremental impact from the account set up in that sort of a structure. And it's really interesting because it flips it the other way around. Instead of saying, hey, we're going to go for trying to drive 28-day click, one-day view metrics, that's going to drive down our CPMs are going to look better, right? But our CTR is going to start going down. Incrementality is going to lower. No, we're going to drive click-based purchases from these campaigns in this specific structure, knowing that the incremental impact is actually more what that 28 plus one is going to take credit for.
Yep. Nobody ever got muscles looking at the weights. You got to interact with them. It's not different when you think about incremental impact in advertising. If the user's not interacting with them, the incrementality is going to be lower. But Luke, we appreciate this. We're excited to keep sharing the results that we're seeing here and to really hold ourselves to the obligation. And you even said it, setting aside all this channel level measurement and assessment, AMER is still the rule of law. The end result on the P&L is still the thing that governs truth more than anything else. What we're trying to get is directional application against the thing that makes the greatest impact on those measures. Measuring marketing tactics with financial outcomes still is the core principle, and we're just trying to make sure that we are getting causal in our behavior as we go. So any last words that you'd leave them with before we head out?
None. No more words. No more words needed. Purchase conversion, ROAS goal, separated by product category.
Rock and roll. Thanks, man.